A very warm welcome to Midori House, live from Studio One here in London, with me, Andrew Tuck. Ahead in the next hour, with juice bars growing from a drip to a sweet, sticky flood on the high streets, how is Denmark's Joe and the Juice reacting to Starbucks wanting more than a sip? And we'll be taking a stroll closer to home to meet one of the businesses that makes Midori House's neighbourhood so pleasing to the eye and ear.
I love Marylebone. Chiltern Street has got such a history anyway. I mean, even just 20, 25 years ago, our repairers were telling us about the top flats were sort of red light flats and things like this, and it's changed. So it's obviously changed so much over the last few decades.
While on that stroll, we pondered what makes the perfect city dog. The Kennel Club's Caroline Kisco will be here with a very special guest later. All that and some good music right here in the next 60 minutes on Midori House. But first, let's get the latest news from around the world with Nick Kelly.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Nick Kelly. Italy's parliament began rushing through austerity measures demanded by the European Union to avert a Eurozone meltdown after US President Barack Obama ratcheted up pressure for more dramatic action from the currency bloc. In Athens, former European Central Bank policymaker Loukas Papademos was sworn in as Greek Prime Minister after days of political wrangling tasked with meeting the terms of a bailout plan to avert bankruptcy. President Obama spoke with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy, and also called the Italian President Giorgio Napolitano. A German government official said there had been an exchange of opinions between Merkel and Obama, while the US Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner demanded fast action from Europe.
The crisis in Europe remains the central challenge to global growth, and it's crucial to all of us that Europe move quickly to put in place a strong plan to restore financial stability.
Rescuers have found 10 bodies, including a child, today as they dug through rubble after the latest earthquake to hit Van, the city in eastern Turkey, already suffering from an earlier quake and simmering anger over the authorities' emergency response. The toll from Wednesday's tremor has risen to 22. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said today China and Iran have normal business ties which should not be targeted by any new sanctions on Iran over its nuclear program, repeating that in any case, sanctions were not the solution. However, the White House spokesman Jay Carney says stringent sanctions will continue against Iran to make it more transparent about its nuclear activity.
We will continue to take measures, working with our international partners, to put added pressure on Iran and make clear to Iran that they need to get right with the world and live up to their obligations with regards to their nuclear program.
Very low levels of radioactive iodine 131 have been detected in Europe, but the particles are not believed to pose a public health risk, the UN Nuclear Agency said today, saying it was seeking to find the source. The International Atomic Energy Agency, based in Vienna, said it did not believe the radioactive particles were from Japan's stricken Fukushima nuclear power plant after its emergency in March. Experts said the origin of the radiation remained a mystery, but could come from many possible sources, ranging from medical laboratories or hospitals to nuclear submarines. A man who confessed to murdering a Ugandan gay activist by beating him with a hammer has been sentenced to 30 years in prison. Enoch Nusubuga was sentenced by a high court in Mukuno for the murder of David Kato. Kato, one of the country's most prominent gay campaigners, was beaten to death with a hammer at his home and died on the way to hospital. The case provoked worldwide condemnation and drew attention to gay rights issues in Uganda. NASA's latest Mars rover Curiosity will kickstart its mission to the Red Planet in 2 weeks' time. NASA officials say Curiosity is headed towards the Gale crater on Mars, where it will assess whether environmental conditions on the planet were ever favourable for the development of microbial life. NASA scientists said the mission was not designed to look for signs of life, and the $2.5 billion rover will not be carrying life-detecting equipment on board.
It's important to know that this mission is really has a purpose of setting us up for the day when we'll go to Mars and do the life detection experiments. It turns out those are pretty hard to do, and you actually need to know a lot about Mars to understand where to go to do those experiments.
Finally, a placard reading Bed Peace, which was used by John Lennon and Yoko Ono during their peaceful Bed In for Peace anti-war protest in Montreal in 1969, is going under the hammer at Christie's in London. The item is part of the auction house's upcoming rock and pop memorabilia sale, which features a range of instruments, clothes, photographs and posters that once belonged to or were owned by former stars of the music industry. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Nick. And now a look at the global weather with Thomas Schaffernacker.
The weather, in association with Kuoni Travel.
Central and Eastern Europe feeling the cold from Kiev to Warsaw to Berlin. Overnight temperatures this weekend widely below zero. The west, however, still mild, especially across France and the UK. So the weekend city forecasts then, London partly cloudy, 15 degrees here. It still feels more like early October. In Zurich, colder, 8 Celsius, some sunshine. In Berlin, it's a sunny day, 16 degrees. In Stockholm, cloudy, 4 Celsius. And the airports this weekend, generally quiet on the weather front. Just the occasional fog patch may cause delays in some Central and Eastern European airports. North America now, nasty weather heading for British Columbia and Vancouver. Rain, snow, high winds, the remnants of a huge blizzard which struck Alaska a day or so ago. Warm weather is set to make a return to the central US and the eastern seaboard for the weekend. Here's the weekend city forecast. San Francisco, 16 degrees and sunny. Chicago, by Sunday, it's also 16 degrees with some sunshine. In New York, 13 and sunny. In Miami, fresh and dry, a high of 25 degrees. The Far East now, after a wet couple of days across Japan, the weekend is looking a lot brighter in Tokyo, where it'll be 19 degrees. In Sapporo, 15 degrees with just a few light showers. And in China, lots of sunshine across northern and eastern parts of China. Beijing, 13 degrees. Shanghai, 19 degrees, both sunny. And that's your Friday weather outlook. I'm meteorologist Thomas Schaffernacker here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Thomas. You're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24. The time's approaching 18:08 here in London, and in a moment we'll be hearing from Bruce Leishman, who's our Kiev-based commentator.
London Ball, as a Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
De Londres, es a Monocle 24.
De Londres, este es Monocle 24.
London Kala, Monocle 24 des.
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
Londonist, sino Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λοντόστα, τέμα on Monocle 24.
Λόντζαδαν, βουρσε, Monocle 24.
Λόντον καρα, Monocle 24.
Welcome back. Bruce Leishman is an occasional contributor to Monocle, and a man who knows a bit too much about the world between Moscow and Almaty. He now joins us on the line from his current base, Kiev. Bruce, I wanted to ask you first of all about the Tymoshenko issue. Obviously, when she was sent to jail a few weeks ago, there was a general feeling that pressure from both Moscow and the West would see her released perhaps after weeks, if not months. But nothing seems to be happening. What's the feeling now in Kiev?
Yeah, absolutely, Andrew. The mood has really changed on that. And I think, you're right. The initial view was that she would be sentenced, she would be found guilty, but she would somehow avoid jail time. What we've seen since her sentencing to, 7 years in prison is the prosecutors are now kind of opening up a whole new raft of investigations and alleging kind of embezzlement of funds during her period as a prime minister, alleging kind of the stashing of diamonds and currency offshore. All these things are probably part of the course of being a Ukrainian politician, to tell the truth. But they're really looking over her history, which could bode pretty badly for Tymoshenko. And there is a sense that, she will have to, do a bit of a stint in prison because, the pressure from the EU and the United States just hasn't been working with President Yanukovych. But she does have, a few things in her favor, and that is, there is, extreme kind of international support for Tymoshenko. But, what she really does have in her favor is that Ukraine isn't a one-party state. It isn't Russia. There is a fairly dynamic, you know, opposition movement going on in the country, and the president rules with a fairly slim majority. So it would be pretty unlikely, based on, you know, current you know, opinion polls, that he will be given, you know, a further term. But certainly during these, you know, in the next few years, the situation is looking fairly grim for Timoshenko.
Now, Bruce, do you think that, you know, she will gain from this? Because in the past, when these leaders have been, you know, sent to jail, it's done nothing to kind of dent their status. And she's certainly somebody who knows how to play the publicity game. And has she actually been silenced while she's in jail, or are you hearing her thoughts on politics in Ukraine even now?
Yeah, look, yeah, and Timoshenko does have a bit of a flair for the dramatic, and she does like the limelight. A letter penned from prison was released last week, and it was done in very Timoshenko style. It was all, you know, sitting below, you know, in my cell, I see the sun setting over my dear Ukraine. That type of language, you know, it was 100% Timoshenko. So I don't know if they've taken her pens away from her since that letter has been released. But certainly it's put Timoshenko back into the spotlight. And it's a bit of the irony of this is that prior to the investigation, prior to the court case, Timoshenko's star was really waning. You know, it was seen that she was, you know, already been the prime minister of the country in a really ineffective government. And that ineffectiveness was largely due to her kind of petty disputes with the president, which, you know, really boiled down to kind of, you know, personal grievances. So Timoshenko's, you know, popularity was really on the decline, you know, and this whole kind of Joan of Arc, kind of, you know, Eva Perón kind of character that, you know, and personality that she projects was beginning to, I think, to really grate on certain segments of Ukrainian society. But what this has done, it's put Timoshenko right back into the center spotlight. And, you know, you walk down the main street of Khrushchev today, you know, there is still the sit-in protest along the street with, you know, with people, you know, it's getting cold in Kiev now, but people are still out. They're there 24 hours a day, keeping a vigil. So I think that, you know, she's getting a lot of, it's going to put her back, you know, front and center in Ukrainian politics when she does, you know, get out of prison.
She's an amazing woman when you think that she's kind of branded herself around the world with a haircut as well. That braided hair has come to represent all sorts of things, like certain kind of innocence and charm. And it's strange that we did her in one of our Star Leader series, but it's certainly part of the aura, isn't it, that look she has?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, certainly if she was just another nameless Ukrainian politician who'd been put in prison, you know, people wouldn't notice. I mean, she's not the only one who's been put in prison by this government. I mean, there's a whole series of people. But Timoshenko does have that star power. You know, she comes out in these kind of, you know, cream, you know, Chanel head-to-toe numbers, you know, waving her hands, and people love it. And it really goes down well with a certain segment of kind of Ukraine. And she's a politician that, you know, she has a recognition factor around the world, which, you know, very few East European politicians outside of Russia would have.
Now, another man who's getting kind of recognition around the world is Viktor Pinchuk, who's one of Ukraine's oligarchs and a man who likes a bit of art, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that makes Ukraine, you know, just so dysfunctional but so interesting for an observer is that it's a pretty poor country, but yet it's home to some of the richest people in the world. And a lot of these are real kind of Gaddafi-style characters, you know, keeping, you know, endangered species as pets, that kind of thing. But there are a few exceptions to the rule, and Viktor Pinchuk is certainly one of them. And Mr. Pinchuk, you know, over the past few years has kind of morphed into this kind of A-list, art collector, and now sits on the board of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles. And in Kiev, he has the Pinchuk Art Center, which is the largest contemporary art space in Central and Eastern Europe.
In fact, I can reveal that actually I did actually come out for the opening of the Pinchuk Art Center, and he flew out Elton John in his private jet to play in a bar for the opening of it.
Yeah, look, he does have a star factor. I mean, every second year he has the Pinchuk Future Prize, which has $100,000 worth of prize money attached to it. It's huge. And on the jury of that is that, in fact, Elton John. But there's, you know, Damien Hirst, and there's Jeff Koons, and Eli Broad, and, you know, Michia Prada. And in fact, last year's winner is a Brazilian artist, Cynthia Maselle, and she's back in Kiev now doing her first solo exhibition, you know, outside of Brazil. You know, so the whole thing is kind of easy to deride as a bit of an ego trip for Ukrainian oligarch, and to kind of see it as being a bit of a cliche of the contemporary art world, you know, with everyone flying into little old Kiev for these openings. But the fact is, it's free, and every day, you know, throughout the winter and the summer, there is a line going around the corner to get into it. So, you know, it really has really developed this kind of contemporary art scene in Kiev, which certainly didn't exist before.
Now, I understand that locals are playing another new game, which is Spot the Mayor. I understand the mayor's on the run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the mayor, Leonard Chavetsky, you know, this guy is a real character. He's a billionaire, surprise, surprise. And they call him Cosmos because he said he wanted to go into outer space and live there with his kitty cat. But the thing is, he hasn't been seen, or he's been seen now, but he hadn't been seen for about 8 months, and people didn't know where he was. People thought maybe he had gone into outer space with his kitty cat. He's also a bit of a crooner, and one thing he has done in office is release a CD of his favourite hits. Now, he was found in Switzerland, then he was spotted in Georgia, and he's recently just turned up in Israel. Unlikely to be coming back to Ukraine because the prosecutors are waiting for him, but he still is the named mayor of Kiev, and so he's still the incumbent officer, and he hasn't been in the country for about 8 months, I think. So, you know, a real sign of kind of the dysfunction which kind of, you know, rules the day in Ukraine.
Bruce, it's an amazing check-in. So it seems though if you've got tigers or lions to sell, you're going to be welcome in Kiev these days. But later we've got a bit of a pet corner, but I'm afraid there's going to be no growling lions and no tigers. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Andrew. See you later. Bye.
I think it's time for a little bit of a song, which is a relevant song which for what's coming up later. It's Orange Juice with One Light. After the break, we'll be hearing from Morten Basser, UK manager for Joe and the Juice, the Danish juice bar that combines Danish level-headed design with a warm, funky interior and even better clientele. You're tuned to Midori House. I'm Andrew Tuck. This is Monocle 24.
There are few greater pleasures in life than a great meal. The Menu is just that. A weekly one-hour programme about eating and drinking. From growers to restaurateurs, we introduce you to the people you need to know. Whether you're out dining in Osaka or out carousing in Sao Paulo. That's The Menu, brought to you in association with Krug, every Tuesday on Monocle 24 at 1900 London time, here on Monocle 24, and also available on our timeshift player at monocle.com and on iTunes.
For listeners in Tokyo or visitors to Japan, you can now enjoy a coffee, a Wilkinson dry ginger ale, or our classic curry at our first ever Monocle Cafe and Shop at the new Hankyu Men's Department Store, just steps from Ginza and the lobby of the Peninsula. Featuring a Monocle shop stocked with our ever-expanding collection of special collaborations, the Monocle Cafe is the perfect place to refuel after a run round the Imperial Palace or a busy day in Marunouchi. For more details, visit monocle.com.
Starbucks today announced plans to buy the Evolution juice bar chain for $30 million. Juice is clearly big money. But in our current issue, we put the spotlight on a company out to challenge the major players with both good product and handsome design. Denmark's Joe and the Juice. Joining me in the studio is Morten Basser, their UK manager, and COO Rasmus Andersen. Hello, Morten.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. So first, can you just tell me, it's interesting to see a Danish juice bar chain spread around the world. What is it, do you think, that's made it have some kind of international currency?
Well, I think one of the things that we are doing different is our interior design, our products, the way we work behind the bar. I think we give the whole juice bar a little boot in the butt and say we need to do this a little bit different. We need to make our juices or our bars be a place where you want to hang out, where you want to be, where you want to be seen. And we need to make a cool vibe. And I think that's what we created so far in Denmark and what we're trying to do here.
It's funny because most juice bars you go into are cold, a bit clinical. They're
exactly.
They're dominated by the fridge.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel, you know, maybe a little bit virtuous going in there, but they're certainly not fun. You seem to have borrowed some lessons from the fashion industry as well. They're slightly cool places to be. There's a bit of style as well involved.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we have noticed is, as you say, when you walk into a juice bar, it kind of gets either religious or a little bit sterile. It's like going to the dentist almost. You're frightened once you walk in. There's no music. Maybe they're wearing a white kilt, and that can actually scare the customer, I believe. We want to make sure that our people are greeted and that they actually think it's cool to be there. And yeah, that you get something different. This is also about giving an experience to the customer. I don't necessarily think going into a juice bar where there's no music, where it's very sterile, there's no one talking, basically, is attractive. I think we do that a lot different. And yeah, a lot better than some of the others.
Rasmus, can I ask you that it's a tough business, actually, in some ways, to make money from. That it's not like coffee, maybe, where at the end of the day you just put the coffee beans back in the cupboard. You're dealing with something that, you know, the fruit is rotten at the end of the day. If you haven't sold it, you chuck it away. When you started looking at this as a business model, is it actually quite tough to kind of go into this market unless you've got a really good offer?
I think that it's very important that you can actually control your supply chain, that you're having the fresh fruit delivered frequently during the week, that your crew, your bar staff, they know the principle of what's fresh, what's not fresh.
Does it scare you also that when you look at this business, when you see someone like Starbucks coming into it, do you think, oh my God, you know, the big boys, you know, both of you, do you think the
big
boys...
I think that's going to be something that we're right now in the middle of trying to get all these people to know that it's healthy to drink juice. There's a lot of people out there that's still going out having Cokes and fries and all that. And the fact that Starbucks now goes into this juice market might actually or will benefit us as well, I think. It's going to put the awareness of health to a lot more people, making this something that everyone knows. We're going towards people being obese, and governments are spending so much money trying to get kids to eat properly from school and so on. It's an education. And the fact that the Starbucks wants to go into this is only going to be good for all of us.
Now, you've brought something in for me to try, which has been very nice of you to come in and use our mixer here. Or yeah. Did you bring your own?
We brought our own machines with us today.
Oh, my God.
So we have created a hell of a nerve for you.
A hell of a nerve.
Which is a strawberry, banana, and elderflower. And yeah, that's one of our 18 juices on the menu right now.
And do they all have these good names as well? Is that part of the brand? It is delicious, by the way.
Yeah, but you know...
Excuse me, while I have another sip.
Yeah, please, go ahead. I'm glad you like it. The juices are, of course, something that we put together over many years, taking the ingredients and figuring out what are these things good for the body. We have a juice called an immunity, boost your immune system. We have a little bit, a cocky one called a sex me up that boosts something else on the male part of the body. And these different juices have an effect on the body, and that's something that we spent a lot of time on researching.
And Rasmus, do you think there's something about being Danish that's good for your brand? You know, that it may not be true, but when you look at Denmark from outside, you think of Nordic, healthy... well designed. Does that, when you're now in this market, try and sell something healthy abroad, is being Danish a good thing, do you think?
I think there's a lot of our female customers that has a preference for Danish or Scandinavian-looking guys. But you can also see when you come to many of these nice places, your office here, you have a lot of Danish furniture. I think that actually we have the fashion from the fashion industry from Denmark and Sweden. They're doing a pretty good job getting their products out there, actually. So
and do you think that you had to adapt at all for the UK market, Morten? Because I know that in Denmark, when we did a little story about you in our current issue,
yeah.
And there was this line in there that, in fact, for example, for coffees and things, that Danes don't normally walk around the street holding anything. They don't like. But whereas in that the culture has crossed from across from America to here, that in London, for example, people are very happy to walk around with a juice or a coffee
exactly.
in their hand.
Well, one of the things when we started in 2002 in Denmark was exactly this. We were taking probably normal cafes in Denmark at the time would be what you've seen in Paris, your local coffee shop or whatever around the corner, where you would come and have a quick little espresso. We needed to you know, get people to understand that you can take your products out of our shop. Please do it. For one reason, they're our commercial. You know, they're walking around with our cup with our name on it. That shows the other people.
And did
around
you notice them. That actually, that really basic piece of branding, putting your name on the cup, as it were, that
of
other
course.
People were not even thinking of doing that.
Well, there are still some coffee shops and juice bars where their juices are not poured into a cup that's branded, and I find that a little bit odd. Because once you've been in my shop and you are taking the juice out of my shop, I would love for other people to see. That looks nice. Where's this? It's Joe and the Juice, and they see the logo and they see the brand.
And as a Danish brand, do you think you have the chance to go across the Atlantic to the States? Do you think that you could go to... Because it's amazing when you look at the American juice bar market. I was looking at the numbers today. I think Jumba Juice has like 750 stores.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's a massive business, and you're a big, healthy company already, but you're 27, 28 stores, is that roughly right?
Yeah, I believe we have... The 25th shop opening in Denmark this week, and we have two more coming over here.
So you can tell you're getting big when you have to look at your COO to see actually how many
stores
you've got.
Yeah,
how many
exactly.
how many is it we've got?
Keep me updated on that. No, so it's going the right way, and I definitely think that, you know, right now we're focusing on London. We have Sweden and Germany coming up, and we're soon ready to hit the American market as well. I think they're ready for us.
Good. Well, Starbucks better. Watch out. Morten
Erasmus,
thank you so much for coming in. It's great to hear about your brand.
Thank you for having us.
Good. You're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from London.
LDN TYO NYC M24. LDN TYO NYC M24.
It's approaching the bottom of the hour here at Midori House in with Monocle 24. Sorry, I had a bit of Jumba Juice or Joe and the Juice rather in my mouth there. I'll be catching up with you again. In the next half hour, we'll be hearing from Britain's Kennel Club about the Discover Dog Show and learning firsthand whether a beagle called Jasper is the perfect office and studio dog. And as part of a new series, we'll also be meeting a Midori House neighbour who says he sells the world's best oboe. But first, the news headlines with Nick Kelly.
Thanks, Andrew. Italy's Senate approved economic reforms intended to reverse a collapse of market confidence today, kicking off a rapid transition that will end the Berlusconi era and clear the way for an emergency government within days. Technocrat Prime Minister Lucas Papademos has taken office to save Greece from bankruptcy, heading a coalition cabinet filled with many of the same politicians who led the nation into crisis. China and Iran have normal business ties, which should not be targeted by any new sanctions on Iran over its nuclear program, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said today, repeating that in any case, sanctions were not the solution. Syrian security forces killed 11 people today as protesters call on the Arab League to suspend Damascus's membership in response to continued violence. At least 13 people were killed in heavy fighting in the Yemeni city of Taiz today, a day after a UN envoy began a new mission to push President Ali Abdullah Saleh to quit under a Gulf peace plan. Very low levels of radioactive iodine-131 have been detected in Europe, but the particles are not believed to be posing a health risk to the public, according to the UN Nuclear Agency, 8 months after Japan's Fukushima disaster. Asia-Pacific CEOs will press world leaders to boost growth and seal a regional trade deal, goals made more urgent by the European debt crisis that has darkened global economic growth prospects. And rescuers found 10 bodies, including a child, today as they dug through rubble after the latest earthquake hit Van, the city in eastern Turkey already suffering from an earlier quake, and simmering anger over the authorities' emergency response. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Thank you, Nick. You're back with Midori House here on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Tuck. Now, nestled in an old shop in London's Marylebone neighbourhood is Haworth, a maker of fine woodwind instruments. Monocle's Daniel Giacopelli visited Haworth to chat to the staff as part of our new series, Meet the Neighbours.
We're a woodwind specialist in the West End, sort of Marylebone area, and we've been around for over 60 years now. And we make one of the world's best instruments. It's probably fair enough to say we make the world's best oboe. We've got people who have been here 40, 50 years. Some of the mouthpieces that we sell from some of our, that we buy in worldwide, are based on mouthpieces that people here designed. And you know, our oboes have been developed over the last 64 years or more of us being here from an instrument which was maybe a lot more simplistic then into something that the world's top professionals use to play the hardest music designed for that particular instrument in all sorts of genres. And the only reason we can do that is because we've got people who've accumulated decades and decades of wealth of knowledge to be able to know what something does. We get all sorts. That's why Marylebone's so wonderful, really, because there's so many tube stations around, it's so easy to get to. So we'll get people just getting lost around Oxford Street coming in. We'll get people, we're very much a destination store, so people come here to try things and specifically try stuff. So we get little kids with their teachers, kids with parents, kids by themselves. All the buskers who play saxophone in London generally come here, come and make sure I've got change for my till. And they're just, you know, lovely guys. We've had them with people like Ernie Watts in the past, who's an international sort of top player. We're not a venue, so it's really tough for us because we want to be able to promote all these people and show that we're of that calibre to be able to deal with these people. But it's just so homely. We give cups of tea, coffee, pastries. If it's of the evening, we have like free wine. People just mingle, chat, and just get to be sort of really intimate with these people that they've maybe idolised for years. We'll have customers who have listened to Ernie Watts and never had the opportunity to meet him. They may have seen him on the Barbican stage or at, you know, like with Maceo Parker at the O2 with Prince. They can't go and meet her. If they're in the store when she's in or she's doing a workshop, they get to chat to her, they get to sign things, they get to tell her about what they did in the day. And it's pretty wonderful. I love Marylebone. It's beautiful. Chiltern Street has got such a history anyway. I mean, even just 20, 25 years ago, our repairers were telling us about the top flats were sort of red light flats and things like this, and it's changed. So it's obviously changed so much over the last few decades, but it's just great. I mean, you can't be thin because there's so many great cafes. Oh my God, Cocorino's Club Sandwich. And their flat white coffee is just crazy good. Love Cocorino. Yeah, it's great. I love Marylebone. Beautiful. Loads of culture, loads of blue circles all over the place with all the fabulous, famous people that live around here. It's funny though, because we see people come into the shop and we kind of stereotype them. So they'll come in wearing something or acting some way and we're like, oh, they're such a bassoon player, you know. Or, oh God, look at that. Or just, you know, or they come in and they're all cool and they've got their big headphones on and their MP3 player and they look a bit slow too. And they've obviously got up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're probably a saxophone player, you know. So each shop does kind of have its own clientele. And it's just lovely because you get all sorts of everybody here.
I'm, say, 68 now, so I should have retired some years ago. Michael Britton. I'm basically an oboe consultant here, meeting the musicians and making sure they're all very happy with our instruments. Just come back from New York, where they're playing our instruments in the Metropolitan Opera, the Philadelphia Orchestras, and Carnegie with them last week. So I do an awful lot of traveling, meeting many musicians, as I say, and then I also spend time at the factory on development. I joined the company in 78 as a professional musician to help actually develop the oboes and clarinets at the time, but mainly the oboes. And we had this one shop, number 31 Chilton Street. And as I say, I started there with a handshake, none of these agreements or anything like that. And 33 years later, I'm still here. And as you see, we've now got a saxophone shop, a clarinet shop, and a bassoon shop. So it's a very specialized business in central London. And actually one of only two, I think, of this type in the world, where we sell every make of oboe besides manufacturing our own. And nearly every make of bassoon and saxophone and clarinet. So it's really a sort of emporium for woodwind players. Many of the visiting orchestras come here from all over the world when they're in town. And so, as I say, it's, we have the shops here and a huge mail order department and a factory down in Worthing with about sort of 25 people. I think total we have around about 60 people working for the company now, as opposed to when I started, very few. So in a nutshell, that's how the company's developed. Coming to work each day is a great pleasure.
That was James Stewart and Michael Britton of Haworth blowing their own oboe. You're listening to Mudori House here on Monocle 24. We're back in a moment.
Every week, Monocle editor Andrew Tuck looks at cities around the world and the people, buildings and open spaces that make up the urban landscape. With interviews and discussions of the spaces and places we live in, The Urbanist is your very own urban audio retreat. That's The Urbanist, premiering every Thursday at 1900 London time here on Monocle 24, and also available on our timeshift player at monocle.com and, of course, on iTunes.
Every month, Monocle deploys over 70 writers and photographers to over 50 countries to deliver our print edition. Covering a unique mix of global affairs, business, culture and design, Monocle publishes 10 magazine editions a year and 2 special newspapers during the summer and winter holiday seasons. With a subscription to Monocle, you'll not only be the first to receive the magazine, you'll also be invited to special events and receive our iconic tote bag from Rutote of Japan. Subscribe to Monocle from £80 sterling at our website at shop.monocle.com/subscriptions. Subscribe to Monocle and keep an eye on the world.
Welcome back to Mudori House with me, Andrew Tuck. Now, we've got a very special guest, and I must say, a very wriggly and shaky guest here in the studio at the moment. His name's Jasper, and he's a 3-year-old beagle from Kennel Club Assured Breeder and Crufts competitor Karen Simpkin. It's a very busy time at the moment in the British canine calendar, because taking place tomorrow is the Discover Dog Show at Earl's Court. The Monocle office is missing a dog, so we're here with Jasper, and we also have the Kennel Club secretary, Caroline Kisco, because we wanted to find out whether actually Jasper... Oh, he's stretching now. Yes, we wanted to find out whether Jasper would be the ideal recruit to the Monocle office, and I'm already giving a big vote of yes. So, Caroline, first of all, I wanted to ask you about Discover Dogs. What is Discover Dogs? Well, while I just stroke Jasper,
while you tell me.
I'm not going to be looking at you, by the way.
Discover Dogs is actually very much the sort of thing that you're talking about here. I mean, the office is very interested in the idea of having their own dog, but you need to decide whether or not a beagle is actually the right type of dog. And Discover Dogs is actually exactly that sort of event. So we have every breed which the Kennel Club recognises in the UK present in Earl's Court in breed booths, so that each breed has its own little booth with experts in the breed to talk about the breed and decide so that people who are thinking of getting a dog can come along, talk to them, decide whether that dog, that breed, will suit their lifestyle, their family and their circumstances.
They talk to the dog or the breeder?
Well, they talk to the breeder, but they're allowed to talk to the dogs as well, and the dogs appreciate that.
And Jasper, what was your opinion? Jasper seems very keen, I think,
well,
to move
I
in.
Well, I think he's more keen on the smoothie than he is on that.
Well, he's had my Joe and the Juice maybe later. Now, you also run a thing called, I believe, Open for Dogs, which is a kind of, a campaign to allow things like this, allow dogs to come into radio studios and greet people like me.
Yeah, absolutely. It Open for Dogs is all about getting dogs into places where actually they were always allowed before, but we've become more and more concerned about where dogs go. And because of that, we're stopping them going into offices, we're stopping them going into restaurants, we're stopping them going into pubs, all of the places where people were very happily taking their dogs before. And there is no truth in the thought that dogs are not allowed into restaurants. They most certainly are. There is no law that says they cannot go into a restaurant. And that's the sort of thing that we want to overcome so that people feel free to take their dogs to work with them, to take them to the local pub when they go for a walk on Sunday, to take them into the local restaurant and so on. And incidentally, many businesses have found that business has improved when they have started to have a different policy and allow dogs in.
Now, just a dog like Jasper, if he kind of moved into Midori House, are they dogs happy kind of wandering around amongst a lot of people?
Yeah, it does depend on the breed, obviously, and Karen's better placed to tell you whether or not the Beagle would be that sort of breed. But many, many, many dogs love the idea of just being around humans, wandering around the office, and we allow them in the kennel club, and everybody loves having the dogs in the business, having them there, you know, tucked away under somebody's desk. They trot out at lunchtime, go for a walk in the park with their owner. There's a very calming effect that dogs have on people, whether it's in an office environment or at home. And Jasper's about to fall asleep, I think.
keeping Jasper away. Now tell me, when I go to New York and things, you see on the street corners there, you see amazing dog creches, and there's good facilities for people to take their dog to work, and maybe they're going out to a meeting so they can drop the dog at the creche. It's funny that's never really taken off in the UK, isn't it? It's because you hear so many poor dogs being left at home. Jasper's yawning now.
Yeah, and I think that the difficulty is simply the attitude that we have towards dogs. If more people were allowed to take their dogs into the office, then the sort of creche idea would obviously grow. Having said that, very many people that do take their dogs to work, and certainly at the kennel club, you take your dog to work and a colleague will look after them at lunchtime or whatever. You know, there's no problem. If you need to go to a meeting or so on, then mainly people will fit around each other. But I do think it's a social problem, in as much as we've got into this state where we're saying exclude, and therefore other businesses such as creches and so on have not grown simply because we are leaving our dogs at home, and that's such a shame.
So how many dogs do you have in your office at work then?
Generally we have at least two in every day, but sometimes they're not there, sometimes they are, and there are lots of other dogs that come into the building. Having said that, central London is not the easiest place to have dogs, as we all know, but most people can manage one way or another, and a smaller breed like Jesper's probably better, simply because they can be picked up to take them up the escalators and, you know, carried onto the underground trains and so on, because that is a sort of a practical consideration that you have to think about before you do anything like that.
Because I have been on your website, and you have a very useful thing which you type in whether you live in a house or a flat, and it kind of picks out the dog for you.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, every time I do it, it says poodle. And I wanted to say beagle, not poodle.
Well, that's okay. Then you simply have to talk to Karen and decide whether or not the beagle would substitute as a poodle.
But is a dog like a beagle a good urban dog, do you think?
I think they can be. They do need plenty of exercise. They're not wonderful off the lead. They're not great dogs for coming back when they're called. And actually that makes them probably a better dog to have in an urban environment, simply because there's no real temptation to let them loose. You need to walk them properly on the lead, which means you get more exercise because the dog needs plenty, and you've got to be there every step of the way. Whereas when you can let a dog off the lead, the dog will go and take lots of exercise on its own as well. So the lazy person's dog is actually a dog that comes to call.
Now, Discover Dogs, is it just recognised breeds that you're allowed to go there? Or is it, because there's all these kind of new hybrids of, you know, cockapoos and
absolutely.
Poodle-doos
and doodle-doos. It's very much a mix of dogs. The Kennel Club is very much about all dogs, not just about pedigree dogs. So in the booths, you will find all of the different breeds. But within, we have a competition called Scruffs. And the final of Scruffs is held at Discover Dogs each year. And Scruffs is all about crossbreeds and mixed breeds, you know, full mongrels right the way through to, as you say, the sort of cockapoos and so on.
Good. Well, I don't want you to go, actually. And I know that maybe Jasper has other appointments, but if you could just stay 1 minute, we're going to play a song first. This is Lissy with A Little Lovin'. Well, I must say this is the first time ever I've had a guest sitting on my lap during the show, and very welcome to. This is Jasper, who's a beagle, and he's sitting on my lap and enjoying the show. And he's joined, he's brought along two people. He's brought along Caroline Kisco from the Kennel Club, and he's brought along someone who claims to be his owner, who's called Karen Simpkin, but I might be disputing that after this. Karen, can I just quickly ask you, so he's gorgeous, and he's a beagle, and is he well-behaved?
Well, not many beagles are well behaved, but he's as well trained as he can be.
So they're a bit obstinate, are they?
They're very willful, very difficult to train, but rewarding when you do so, yes.
And how many beagles do you have then?
I have five. I have a 10 and a half, which is his grandmother, a 7-year-old, his uncle, a 6-year-old, his mother, him, who's 3, and a 7-month-old puppy.
And they're all related to each other?
They're all related.
Amazing. Lovely. Now, Carol, I wanted to ask you, obviously, do you see that there are, you know, a terrible thing to say, but do you see there are trends in dog buying,
yeah,
that there are types of dogs
definitely
that suddenly become popular? Mm. And I'm sure it's something you don't particularly encourage, but what are the kind of trends that you're seeing in the things that people are asking you, the breeds that are suddenly more popular?
Well, unfortunately, people tend to be very much affected by celebrity. So that if you see celebrities carrying around these little, what they call handbag dogs, like Chihuahuas and so on, in their handbag, people will suddenly decide that they have to have a Chihuahua in their life. And of course, a Chihuahua actually is still a dog. It's not a toy, it's not an accessory. And it has the same needs as Jasper or any other dog. So, you really do need to make sure that you're actually choosing a dog that will suit your lifestyle, not one that just simply looks right. What we're also finding is that more and more people, family people, think that the completion of the family is all about owning a Labrador. Now, while Labradors are fantastic dogs, there are huge numbers now in the country, and there are some really great breeds out there that have just been forgotten. And many of those are breeds like the Miniature Bull Terrier, the Smooth Fox Terrier, the Dandy Dinmont. There are lots and lots of breeds out there, lovely breeds that make great pets, and they've just become forgotten.
So do you have to do a bit to kind of make sure that some of these breeds don't die out?
Yeah, very much so. We've actually got a campaign which is about what we've called the vulnerable British and Irish breeds. I mean, obviously, there are many breeds in the world that either we recognise or we don't recognise at all. But what this campaign is very much is focused on the native breeds. So what we're trying to do is simply to promote those breeds so that people remember that they exist. These are breeds that were hugely popular in years gone by, in days gone by, but have been lost simply from the public's consciousness. And there is a worry not only that they could ultimately die out, but equally well, their gene pool gets smaller and smaller simply because they are getting smaller in number. And therefore, if they had any health problems, any health challenges, it would be much more difficult for them to come back from that.
And what's happening to actual dog ownership in the UK? Are the numbers... Jasper's having a snack here on my lap.
You can hear
not,
him
not,
munching.
It's not the Joe and the Juice. He's having a little biscuit. And just tell me, what's happening with actual numbers of dogs in the UK?
Numbers are fairly steady. We saw a slight decline in recent years, but actually they've come pretty much back up again. There are between, and it is quite hard to tell, to be absolutely definitive, but there are between 8 and 10 million dogs in the UK. So they are still our most popular pet.
And what's the most popular breed in the UK?
The Labrador.
Now, there's been when you notice it on our city streets, oh, Jasper's very wriggly. Jasper, I've got a guest going down between my legs at the moment. Oh, oh! Sorry.
Taking the headphones with him.
Sorry, Nid had a bit of an incident there. Now, when you look on our city streets, I notice that the colour of Labradors, there's this real trend for the chocolate dark brown.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
And are they beginning to become the majority of the Labradors we see on our streets?
I'm not sure they're actually the laboratory. Sorry, the majority or even the laboratory. But there is this idea that the chocolate is unusual. And of course, by being unusual, it's now become usual because everybody wants one because it's unusual. And now actually they are as commonplace pretty much as the yellow or the black Labrador. So really, any of the colours are still very much popular.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, especially Jasper, who's now... he's going to eat Post-it.
No,
he can't eat a Post-it. He can have a biscuit, but not a Post-it. We're going to go to a song now. This is The XX with VCR. I don't know if I want to be licked by every guest that comes here, but that was actually rather enjoyable. Anyway, that's all from us here at Midori House. Today's show was produced by Gillian DeBias. Our researcher was Tom Hall, and our studio manager was Anna Veal. Nick Kelly is here with the headlines, and just a moment at the top of the hour, and then it's the menu with Tyler Brulé.